So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Vince Russo is back in charge again.
Can't find your scissors?
Wow!
Come on, Sid. Sid, what's the matter, Sid? Can't find your scissors?
I'm not kidding around, Tony. Sean Stasiak, he was beat in the WWF the last time we saw him. We heard about what happened in New York, and now here he is just walking to the ring on Nitro.
I came to WCW with one thing in mind, to beat Vince McMahon at his own game.
I'm not ribbing you.
That is Mike Awesome.
He's the heavyweight champion of ECW. The last time we saw him, he had that belt. What's he doing here?
Doesn't he have some kind of title defense?
And you say that Billy Kidman can't draw flies.
Benoit knew. Guerrero knew, Saturn knew, Malenko knew, Douglas knew, and they left. They're gone.
After everything we've been through, you don't trust me? What do I look like, J.J. Dillon to you?
But that didn't surprise anyone, because if you look up at the WWF right now, and who's been a champion up there, with the exception of one person, they all come from here. It's just that you and your old bastard friends ran them out so you could be a 14-time world champion.
We're shooting here.
The White Hunter is back from last summer.
It's not done.
Who's driving the Hummer? I never thought I'd say that again.
We have literally a train wreck every segment here, Scott Hudson.
Welcome to another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. Pretty well. Thanks for asking.
Our old office, which is still Wei and I, our current office.
Yeah.
Slowly falling apart, Wei.
Yeah. Today's probably my last day here.
Oh, no.
I'm done with this place.
You're done?
Yeah.
They've told me I have to stay here for another 2 weeks.
I don't know. I'm sorry for you, but the furniture takes time to build.
Yeah, that's true. We had no internet all morning here. Unbelievable. Yeah. And the men's washroom now has no lights in it.
That's why you use the ladies.
I couldn't.
Like all the other guys.
Yeah. So, it's pretty bare bones here, Wei.
But this place still works.
Yeah, we still got a functioning broom closet.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that of all the places to stay, maintain itself the longest, it is our shitty Review Away studio.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's the dawning of a new era at our new office.
What do you mean?
It's the powers that be.
Oh, that's the tagline of this Nitro that you're about to talk about.
Okay. This edition of Nitro, Wei.
Yeah.
I just kind of thought, it's April. I remember that Nitro took place in April in 2000. Let's review it. I'm so glad I chose this Nitro. So many emotions, mainly anger, that came out of this review.
I've never seen this Nitro prior to...
You never saw it?
No, I've never seen it.
I remember being really excited for this Nitro back when it happened because...
How did they set this up?
Well, everyone knows that Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara had come into the company in October of 99, leaving the WWF. They were the writers for Nitro, or for WCW, for a number of months. And then in January, they decided, this stuff sucks. We're going to make Vince Russo, you can be part of a committee with other writers. And he said, fuck that, I can go home and you still have to pay me. Okay. So Vince Russo went home in January. This was when he had... The last straw was that he had proposed that Tank Abbott is going to win our world title. And they were like, that's fucked up. That's a horrible idea, sir.
And who is they?
Well, Bill Bush was this accountant within Turner who was kind of instilled to kind of run the day-to-day in WCW when they sent Eric Bischoff home in September just prior to Russo coming in. So Bischoff had been sent home in September. Russo was sent home in January. February and March were abysmal. We reviewed that uncensored about a month or so ago. That was during that time period where it was Kevin Sullivan was in there. I believe Terry Taylor, Ed Ferrara was still on board. Bob Mould was there. And it was like they had done such crazy booking for 4 months, like Russo style, that it's a lot like what Impact is right now, where all this insanity is now done. And we've got this feeling where it's like you're not invested in anything. And that's what those 2 months were. They were really boring, where the most unique concept was the Yappa Pie Indian strap match.
Right.
This was what was coming out at the time. So as a fan in 2000, when they announced Bischoff and Russo are coming back, well, I was like, this will not be boring. I'm sure this will be exciting. So it was something in WCW to look forward to. I think all fans are optimistic. They were like, well, maybe this will shake things up. Maybe they will now finally have a fighting chance against the WWF. And this will be their first big show towards the comeback trail. So I think every WCW fan at that point always hoped that they will reclaim that glory and they'll find their way back to the promised land when they were destroying the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And this was to be the beginning. And it was the beginning. And the end would take place 11 months later. So we transport ourselves back to April 10th of 2000. Wei and I were mere kids in grade 10.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Denver, Colorado at the Pepsi Center.
Mm-hmm. The Pepsi Center.
Now, Wei, going into this Nitro, did you have any expectations of just what to expect here? A Russo and Bischoff booked WCW.
I knew that something big was happening. I knew this was the beginning of that new blood. I guess was that thing already in full swing by this point?
No, this was the kickoff.
Okay, the kickoff.
This was their big angle that they had planned out. New blood against the Millionaires Club.
Yeah, I suppose I expected garbage, and I guess I was given garbage, but maybe a bigger piece of garbage, more special piece of garbage.
I will preface this by saying after this show took place, at the time, people loved this show.
Really?
And I can totally see why, but let's see how our 2012 eyes react to this. This edition of Nitro. The week prior to this, they decided in their wisdom that they weren't going to put on a new edition of Nitro. They were simply going to air classic clips of Nitro and prepare people for the return of Russo and Bischoff. And they decided to do this lame duck edition of Nitro the night after WrestleMania. So they got murdered that night and did a rating the prior week of a...
Well, I'm assuming they did this because they probably knew that they were going to get killed anyway.
I guess so. They did a 1.8 that prior week. So here they come back with Russo and Bischoff. So automatically, you know, they're going to destroy the prior week's number.
Yes.
So to people simply looking at the numbers, it's like, oh, look, Russo and Bischoff, look what they did. And Tony Schiavone welcomes us to the dawning of a new era. And our announcers are Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Double M, Mark Madden.
Yes.
Who would be with us for a portion of the show. This was back, Nitro was 2 hours at this point. They had cut down from 3 hours to two. Mm-hmm. Thank God. There's a part of me that thinks that they never alerted Russo that they had moved back to 2 hours because this show was written as if it was 3 hours and you crammed two, like 8 hours into two.
Yeah.
The entire locker room is out in the ring, summoned by Russo, and they're playing up how some of these men's careers could be over. And Madden points out that a lot of the big names are not out here. Who the fuck are these jobbers we've got out here? Where are the stars? And Jeff Jarrett comes out last, preceded by Van Hammer. And they all say that they have no idea what is going on. And Jarrett speaks on the microphone. He says that Vince Russo had the biggest hand in turning the WWF around. Why? Because I was there. I single-handedly saw Vince Russo turn around the company.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I think just about everyone of any consequence in the WWF says not the case.
No. But at the time, when he came to WCW, a lot of people were singing his praises.
That they were. People when him and Ferrara came, people thought, well, that's it for WWF. Mm-hmm. WCW is going to murder them.
Mm-hmm.
So he then talks about how Russo was unseated by some good old boys, and he buries those people sitting at home. Do you want to keep count of all the references that the average person... It, you know what? Let's keep count of how many references you aren't sure of, okay? Because there were ones I wasn't sure of, okay? And what does that say?
Well, I didn't know about the whole good old boys deal. I guess he was referring to Bill Bush. And I just realized that after...
Did you figure that out watching Nitro?
No, I figured it out from you mentioning it to me, because I had no idea. I was completely lost on this storyline, period, just because I wasn't following it at the time, and I didn't know Russo's involvement on TV prior to this.
No one watching Nitro every week would have been aware of this, okay? No one is well-versed on the writing staff.
Yeah.
Like, imagine this on an edition of Mad Men, where Don Draper comes out one week in the office and alerts everyone it's actually 2012 and not 1966. And him and Matt Weiner had a big falling out, and he's left the show. But you know what? The real producer who led to this show's success, his name is Bob Ting. Okay. And Bob Ting was sent home months ago, but Bob Ting is back now. How confused would you be?
I'm very confused just at this moment. But it really seemed like at parts of this show that prerequisite to watching this show is to read the Wrestling Observer newsletter.
So we've already established that about 4% of this audience was popping huge for this. And then he introduces Vince Russo. He says, the power is Vince Russo. And this was the first time he had been introduced on television. He had been showing on camera back in the WWF, but this was the first time Russo was a character on the show.
Did he have any type of on-air role prior to this? Was he ever referred to off-air?
Never as Vince Russo. Remember they did George Steinbrenner on Seinfeld with him.
Uh-huh.
Very clever.
Yeah.
Where we heard his voice. Calls him Vince McMahon's best-kept secret. And Russo comes out, and he plays up how he turned WCW around in the fall, and now he is back. And Russo says the new blood was changing the game while the old boys network removed him. And he calls those, the old boys, scum. And he's alerted... He says he was alerted of this change to the writing team, and he knew it sucked. And you know who else thought it sucked? Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and all of the radicals. They knew that the change in the writing team sucked, so they left our show to go to the better show, Raw. And he included Shane Douglas in this group. So we were establishing this as a shoot, but then working us with Shane Douglas being a part of this shoot group leaving because of the new creative team.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome back, folks. This is the turnaround. And he says that the old boys network and the inflated egos are over, and it's time for you to make way for me, the head writer, to be featured all over this show. The inflated egos are done. And then we hear over the loudspeaker, are you done yet? And I thought that my head was conveying a message, and it was on screen here. But it was Eric Bischoff. He comes out. Mark Madden says, I've either woke up in wrestling heaven or died and gone to wrestling hell. Lots of great statements in hindsight on this show, the latter being very true for Mark Madden. Bischoff and Russo come in, and in classic Russo swerve fashion, they shake hands and hug.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess a reveal that kind of falls flat. I don't know if they're teasing any type of dissension between the two prior to this, but it wasn't very surprising.
Because I believe that 70% of this Denver crowd had no idea who this New Yorker was that was talking to them about the good old boys network.
No.
Do I have that on my cable package? The Good Old Boys Network? So they hug. They said they were both screwed by the Old Boys Network. I wanted this Old Boys Network to come out because they, to me, came across... They were the babyface group that had extinguished us of these two. Mm-hmm. And said that during his time off, it allowed him to reflect on the mistakes he did, including Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, Sting, DDP, and Sid Vicious, and the biggest mistake of all being Hulk Hogan. Remember that, folks. Bischoff runs down Hulk Hogan here. And then they cut to the back, and all of the old guys are watching the show on a monitor. And then Bischoff and Russo put over the new blood, which was the new blood standing behind them. And all I could see here was Van Hammer, Fit Finlay, Brian Knobbs, and Scott Steiner. Mm-hmm. The new blood.
Yeah, well. Hey, can you explain to me the original? Were these people banded together at all? Like this this new blood group? Were they prior to this episode?
Consider this a complete spin-off of the old Nitro. Huh? Nothing is the same.
Oh, it's a reboot.
Yes, it's a complete reset.
Okay.
So they show DDP, Kimberly, Sting, Sid, Luger, and Elizabeth. They come out, and Bischoff says, for once, they look like they showed up for work. The baby faces. He makes a joke that Sid doesn't have a softball game to go to. Luger doesn't have lunch with Michael Jordan.
What is that in reference to?
I guess he went for lunch one day during a Monday Nitro shoot to go meet Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Dude, I have no fucking idea. But this was all great for television. Broadcasting. He says the DDP doesn't have any fans to meet at a trailer park, and Sting doesn't have a Hollywood premiere. He says he made DDP.
Because Sting went to the Ready to Rumble premiere?
I guess, yeah.
The last week? Okay.
Yeah, which they established was not on a Monday or
right.
Whatever.
All right.
He says he rebuilt the career of Sting. He made Lex Luger a multimillionaire when the WWF didn't want you anymore.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just star making in the process here. And said he can make and break Sid. I guess he was saying that I could be a turnbuckle. I could break you.
Oh, I see.
Then Russo grabs the mic and says, I want to talk. Sick of these egos. I want to talk about Ric Flair. And he calls Ric Flair a piece of shit on the bottom of his shoe. And he's going to flush that piece of shit down a toilet. And then he asks for all the titles to be handed over because all the titles are vacant, including Jeff Jarrett's United States title. And the crowd chants Goldberg, the only person I think the crowd wanted on this show. And then Sid gets on the mic and tells Bischoff, if you want to take my WCW title, you're going to have to take it from me. And Bischoff threatens to fire him if he doesn't. Then he says, what, Sid? Don't have any scissors? There was silence. So what did Bischoff do? Like any green worker who fucks up a spot, he just immediately repeats it. Says, what, Sid? No scissors? And shockingly, the Denver crowd was not aware of an incident that happened in a hotel room in 1993 with Arn Anderson. How did they not know something that happened 7 years ago in a hotel?
What are they, marks?
Fuck, it's like, yeah, they've never talked about it on TV, but you should know this.
You've never, you're telling me this 8-year-old in the Denver crowd has never been on a message board or read an issue of the Wrestling Observer newsletter?
Jesus Christ. And then more Goldberg chants. I was just amazed that this crowd was behind anybody. And the announcers play up the reactions later in the night by Hogan and Flair, who have not shown up yet for this monumental Nitro. And they show Hogan arriving as they go to break. That was segment one. Segment two. Sting walks in to talk to Hulk Hogan. Says, Hogan, we need you to be the general manager. And He updates Hogan. No, he wasn't talking about being a general manager. That's 12 years later.
Yeah, I felt like I watched
These guys were old guys positioned as such on TV 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Sting tells him, Eric Bischoff is running you down in the opening segment. And Hogan is, he's not even mad. He's like, oh, Christ. It's like telling him that, like, the garbage chute is broken. You're going to have to fix it. Oh, man, again. And then Sting ends with, I'm not ribbing you. I'm not ribbing either, brother. Has this set the table way for your interest in Nitro?
Yeah, I mean,
this was not boring. I will say that.
It was not boring. It was not boring to you. It was not boring to you or I.
Maybe confusing, but not boring.
It was confusing for me. Okay. And I felt like I host a wrestling, co-host a wrestling podcast once a week. I feel like I'm pretty primed for all this content. But even myself, I was just, I just left the first segment feeling very confused. I will say, though, that it seemed like a very wild and new idea for pro wrestling at the time. Whether or not it worked, absolutely not.
That's definitive. They announce a four-man mini tournament for tonight, with the winner taking on Jeff Jarrett for the vacant WCW title at Spring Stampede. And DDP comes out, and he no longer gets pyro. He goes to do his bang sign, and then he looks confused because his pyro's gone, and then they kill his theme music.
Mm-hmm.
So the production truck is clearly sided with Russo, and Russo is now producing this show. And then they cut Lex Luger's music, and as he's posing, they bring up the house lights, I guess interrupting his posing. And Schiavone says, the mind games continue.
Yep.
First match of the night is Diamond Dallas Page and Lex Luger. Welcome to the new era of WCW. Luger attacks DDP in the corner with stomps. Scott Hudson calls this pay-per-view quality. Mind you, this was also 6 days before a pay-per-view. Spring Stampede.
Yeah. Yeah. This was the go-home show.
It was the go-home show.
Mm-hmm.
It was where they have not even told you the address of the home.
Mm.
And then drops him with knees repeatedly. And then midway during the match, Buff Bagwell comes out, and he has pyro. So I guess the storyline here is that the budget money has now been allocated for the young talent instead of the old guys.
Yes.
And it's being used foolishly for run-ins, mm-hmm. where the new blood can now get pyro for run-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes down, and DDP hits a low blow, and Schiavone's going nuts. He's like, it's only segment two! It's only segment two.
This show's been so good so far.
Oh, look at my run sheet.
Yeah.
And Bagwell hits on Kimberly. Then he kisses Elizabeth, and it distracts Luger. DDP hits a diamond cutter, and he pins Luger 4 minutes and 23 seconds. Horrendous match.
You don't even have to bother commenting on the matches, because they were nothing.
If ever there was a show where the matches just felt like so inconvenient, it's like, oh, here's some wrestling, but we're not fans of this shit.
Yeah.
This was it. There's no emphasis on any of this. Hogan is in the back searching for Eric Bischoff, and then Kurt Hennig approaches Vince Russo and says, what's going on? And he had just arrived. Apparently all the talent, they just showed up late.
Yeah.
Hogan, Flair, Hennig. Mm-hmm. And Russo says, don't worry. You're going to face Jeff Jarrett tonight, and if you win, you'll get that title shot at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Kurt Hennig
from WCW getting a title shot. Has he ever main evented any show in WCW?
No, I don't think so. Not main event. He did some matches with Ric Flair, 97. That was about it. Didn't have a great run in WCW. Mm-hmm. Not his prime run. So then Tank Abbott comes out, the almost WCW champion at one point, and he cuts a promo. Says, I'm a shoot fighter, not a candy-ass wrestler on this wrestling show. And he doesn't know any moves, but he kicks ass. And I came here for Bill Goldberg, and he got hurt, and he left the first week I got here. And until he comes back, I'm going to beat up innocent victims, including Mother Teresa. And he goes down, and he attacks Mark Madden, tears his shirt off. And then he goes into the ring. Security stops him. And I guess this was their idea to build to a dream match between Bill Goldberg and Tank Abbott.
Well, this is, I guess, one notch just below world champion, isn't it, for Tank Abbott? A feud with Bill Goldberg. But I really like this part where he was beating up Mark Madden. He's just punching him in the gut and taking, you know, ripping his shirt off.
I'm sure they didn't tell him they were going to tear his shirt off. I'm sure they just did that on their own just to fuck with Madden. Jarrett is upset at Russo for having him wrestle tonight on a wrestling show. Russo says, "Trust me. Who do I look like? J.J. Dillon?" This was the most inside show ever. Yeah. Russo and J.J. Dillon did not get along. And believe me, I would go to the ends of the earth believing J.J. Dillon's version of their relationship over Vince Russo's. And J.J. Dillon was someone that made money in wrestling. So anyway, then we just... quick cuts. It was like no backstage segment was longer than like 10 seconds here. Billy Kidman storms out of the locker room as Torrie Wilson asks, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And before I could even ask, what is he going to do? Terry Taylor points to Eric Bischoff's locker room, instructing Hulk Hogan where Eric Bischoff is. So as we go to break, it's, oh my God, he's going to find Eric Bischoff. God, my remote would be on lock on the USA Network by this point. Hogan is then speaking to Eric Bischoff after the break. Bischoff, Hogan here, not even hearing the segment, just, "What's up, Eric?" Oh, nothing, Hulk. Come on into my office and I'll explain everything to you. He sounded like someone I used to work with. He's like, "Oh, don't worry. Everything's great."
Oh, I gotcha.
Billy Kidman walks to the ring and he has a microphone. He says he feels that he's been given a get-out-of-jail-free card and he's been held down for years by the older talent, and calls Hulk Hogan the biggest egomaniac of them all. Says, "I might be small, but I have two things you will never have, Hulk. Heart and talent." And says, "You got your tan from being in the spotlight too long." That was a good line.
Yeah.
Calls Hulk Hogan. He says, this was all based on an interview Hulk Hogan did on Bubba the Love Sponge, saying that Billy Kidman wouldn't be able to draw at a flea market. Mm-hmm. And Kidman comes back here saying, "Well, no one would know about drawing flies like a pile of shit like you, Hogan." And Scott Hudson here pipes in, with none of this backstory, just says, "We saw the interview on the internet." Of course we did. Hogan then comes out, and Hudson says, "This ain't no flea market." This was so funny, dude. I don't think you and I, if WCW had come to us and said, "You guys get to call Nitro however you want," I don't think you and I could have been this cryptic. Purposely.
No.
And this was booked this way.
Yeah.
Hogan says, "I've listened to you crying and asking for a push, and you give the young guys a bad name." I don't know why they even bother saying any of this shit matters. It's like, this is all fake. This is all scripted by the writers who were mad at the Old Boys Network, who was scripting this fake shit before for this fake title that we're going to fight for real money that you have to pay for on Sunday.
Well, you're supposed to believe that this isn't scripted. You're supposed to believe that this is them going off script.
Like, why don't they just air 2 hours of, like, the production meeting? Like, that's what they want to convey to everybody. This is all fake. Uh-huh. This is all bullshit. But this is the real part. We're going to give you the politics.
Listen, I feel like Russo probably at the time felt like it's very hard for a wrestling fan to suspend their disbelief into a scripted product with the internet out there. So his thinking was probably, why not adopt the internet and adopt reality into our scripted storylines? And this is what you get.
I think that's such a flawed concept, even at this point. I mean, compare the internet's influence today versus in 2000. It's night and day. I think you could get this, just that scissors comment. No one knew that.
Yeah.
No one, I don't know. He tells Kidman that he is pee-whipped by Torrey Wilson. Pee-whipped. Pee-whipped. Oh, Christ. Look at what this guy was doing here in 2000. 2 years before he'd have that big match with The Rock. Just contrast the use of Hulk Hogan then and now. Whether you're a fan of Hulk Hogan or not, what a waste of this guy's time.
Well, contrast the use of Billy Kidman, most of all.
Well, anyway. Kidman takes exception to pee-whipped, and he attacks Hulk Hogan. But Hogan makes his own comeback on the floor. Kidman, I guess, was the heel here.
Yeah, he was. He definitely was. Although he cuts a babyface promo.
Well, the whole concept here is these young guys have been held down for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of a babyface concept.
Absolutely.
But it was so weird. Like, Russo and Bischoff were so over-the-top heels.
Uh-huh.
But all these undercard guys were like, they had been babyfaces to the crowd for this whole time.
Yeah.
Very.
They were heels under a traditionally babyface concept, but it didn't matter because this crowd, which as you would expect, took to the established people. They took to the superstars.
Because they're established. They view them as stars.
Exactly. And thus you have a Billy Kidman right now in this program who's positioned as the young guy who's been disrespected, but rather than, the guy who's been pushed under the glass ceiling, he's portrayed now as the punk kid who's disrespectful.
So Hogan makes his own comeback here on Kidman.
And he destroys Kidman.
Like, murders this guy.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to see the match. Beats the shit out of him. Then Bischoff comes out, and he's got a chair. And Hogan, the babyface in this, is, yeah, Eric, come, help me. Help me here with the chair. We'll both beat up Kidman, this little punk. And, God, if I have to see this fucking heel turn scenario one more time where a guy holds up a chair and pivots his hips to hit the other guy, Jesus Christ, I'm going to take a fucking bat to my TV every single time. And he lays out Hogan with a chair to the head.
Oh, I love it. I actually love it. I wish every turn in pro wrestling looked like this.
Hogan, think about this. I can't let Kidman get heat on me, but Eric, you can hit me with the chair. I'll even juice for you, brother.
Eric Bischoff comes out and basically saves Kidman from more of a beating here.
Fuck me. So Kidman makes his comeback here as Bischoff has laid out Hogan, and Kidman climbs on top, and Bischoff counts three. So Hogan put over Billy Kidman.
Oh, please.
Made a star in one night.
Oh, God. Yeah.
This was the beginning of Billy Kidman's rise to superstar status.
Yeah.
This was where it all began.
Totally, yeah. The superstar heel, Billy Kidman.
Yeah. The flea market hero. Ric Flair arrives in a limo. He was in a good mood because the limo didn't have a television and was not watching this show. Then we go... After the break, Hulk Hogan is just tearing shit apart backstage while he's got blood all over his white shirt. A worker through and through, wearing a white shirt when you're doing juice. And Flair is then shown in the go position, watching the opening segment. He was as perplexed as we were.
Mm-hmm.
And Ric Flair comes out, cuts a promo on Vince Russo, saying Russo grew up watching Ric Flair and compares himself to John Elway here in Denver. And to the Yankees, and says, I didn't get old, I got great. And this is the only sport where guys get shit for getting old. Everywhere else, they treat you as being great. And he calls out Russo. This is actually a good promo by Flair. This was the first pro wrestling promo that wasn't all fucking cryptic and stupid.
Yeah, it was a very good babyface wrestling promo.
Yes. But instead of Vince Russo, Scott Steiner comes out. Now... Everything here involves a backstory, which is driving me nuts. Scott Steiner, 2 months before, after Russo had left, Nitro was live, and Scott Steiner got to cut a promo. And instead of cutting the promo that he had been told to with the bullet points, he decided to just, I'm going to talk about what I want. So at this point, I don't even know who he was feuding with, but he decides to cut a promo on Ric Flair, who he had no program with at the time, and calls him an old bastard who is still in the limelight, and said, this is on a live edition of Nitro. He was like, every time you come on our TV, people turn on Raw because it's better. So what happened? They suspended Scott Steiner with pay.
Oh, Jesus.
I love this company. Nothing says discipline like, don't come to Nitro next week. But what about my money? Oh, I will still pay you. Don't worry. No. Awesome. So I don't have to pay for transportation or anything? Great. So now this was a shoot way. We were going to get shoot programs.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott Steiner comes out and calls him an old bastard and brings up his promo in February and how he got suspended. Said, you ran all the talent out of WCW, and now all of them are on top in the WWF. Why did you do this to our company? There's such a better show going on right now. Fuck. Calls him white trash, and then he put in these fake teeth to mock Ric Flair. And who shows up? Shane Douglas.
Shane Douglas.
To attack Ric Flair from behind. And the announcers are so confused because he doesn't work here anymore. He left with the Radicals. So now we've got a shoot promo that Steiner cuts on Ric Flair, but that's a backdrop for our feud between Ric Flair and Shane Douglas, with the basis of Shane Douglas cutting promos on Ric Flair while he was in ECW, but then dropping that when WCW signed him the prior summer.
And of course, this is all a backdrop for the bigger feud between Ric Flair and Vince Russo.
So
it's layered storytelling.
Yes. So we got three feuds on the go here with Flair. The deal with Shane Douglas was that that helped get his character over in ECW, was cutting these shoot promos, and mainly his target was Ric Flair. So WCW thought, oh man, we've got these two guys on the same roster. This will be the biggest dream match ever. So let's build it up for, what do you think, two segments? Yeah, we'll do that. Mm. It's going to do a huge quarter.
Well, the whole world knows about this Shane Douglas, Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah. Just met with silence here when he attacked him. Then we cut to the back and Kevin Nash arrives on crutches. Great. And then they show Bret Hart sitting in the audience. Right as Scott Hudson says, this was verbatim what he said. We have literally had a train wreck every segment.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And we all know the heat between Flair and Douglas. No, we don't. Because you haven't explained it. You are the announcers.
Well, you should have done your research before watching this entertainment program.
Holy fuck. I want to personally thank Brian Alvarez and R.D. Reynolds, because I've never had to rely so much. I read the like 40 pages on the weekend of Death of WCW to figure out what was going on here. I was so confused. Ric Flair is in the back searching for Shane Douglas. So we've got essentially the exact same angle going on with Hogan and Flair searching for people in the back and attacking them. Okerlund is with Shane Douglas, who doesn't work there, but has gotten interview time and backstage access. Okerlund says, you asked for your release and you got it. Why are you here? And says, I sat back and watched Ric Flair mock this industry for years, and I have hated him forever. Okay. Hudson then talks about Shane Douglas and the Radicals. He said, we all called it Black Monday when we lost the Radicals and the talent that was supposed to lead us into the new millennium. We lost them. They're gone. Why are you watching our show?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to watch the talent that was going to lead them into the new millennium, they were on the other station. This was mind-boggling television, folks. Television you have to watch.
I'd say it's one thing if you were to do, if you were to make comments like that. If you're TNA today, at least you're not going directly head-to-head with your competition, where your choice is to watch one or the other. I mean, at least with TNA, you can watch Raw, you can watch SmackDown, and you can watch TNA. You have time for all that.
But when you're going head-to-head against your competition, it's one or the other, and I'm probably going to choose the better show.
Sting and Sid Vicious is our next match. Shivani says that Sid had some phenomenal matches en route to winning the WCW title that he was forced to vacate tonight. Some classics with the Harris brothers, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. Sting clotheslines him to the floor. There's a military press to Sting onto the guardrail.
By the way, this is the second match in the show, an hour into the program.
Ah, yeah. You can't let this little ring get in the way of you. It's their podium for promos, for shoot promos. Yeah. There's a double clothesline spot, and then the wall comes down and sets up a table on the floor. Sting misses a splash in the corner, and Sid goes for a powerbomb. It looked like the wall was supposed to stop them, but it was late. So Sid hit the powerbomb. Wall then hits Sid with a chair, and then Wall chokeslams Sid through a table on the floor, and Sid is counted out at 6 minutes and 17 seconds. So Sting wins by countout to go on and take on DDP later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Shivani tells us, usually, folks, we have a run sheet, and I can tell you what's coming up next. But tonight, I have no idea what's coming up next. I'm not making up any of this. This is what he said.
You're not being just your usual witty self here.
No, there is no sarcasm from my mouth. I have no idea what's coming up next, is what he told us. My run sheet doesn't tell me anything. So Ric Flair comes back into the ring, and he calls out Shane Douglas. Says, you've really pissed me off. And he starts typing. He's like, you can't type it. Only Ric Flair can make this shit work. And the announcers reiterate, Shane doesn't work here. Hogan is still in the back, turning over couches and going crazy. Presumably, he's been doing this for an hour, just tearing stuff up in the back. He had to have been tired. And then he threatens to kill Eric Bischoff. I'll kill you, Eric. And then he just attacks two guys in the back. We had no idea who they were. The train wreck continued as Shivani threw to the premiere of Ready to Rumble, where they briefly showed Sable.
Oh, yeah.
Sable was there.
Yes.
And they have Vampiro being interviewed. He said, I used to live on that street corner right over there.
Mm.
Awesome. And then, wasn't this a... something to dwell on. Shivani plugs that next week on Thunder, David Arquette will be our special guest.
Oh, boy.
Man, when it rains, it shits.
No.
Match number three is Jeff Jarrett against Kurt Hennig. And Hennig had been one of Vince Russo's henchmen back when he was the power to be. So Kurt Hennig felt he had an allegiance with Vince Russo. Bischoff is in a secret skybox, the announcers alert us, and Hogan is busy searching all of the skyboxes for Eric Bischoff. They say he's on a scavenger hunt.
Hmm.
Hennig attacks Jarrett on the floor. They announce, right by the announce table, Hudson tried to make the best sense out of Jeff Jarrett being handed a WCW title shot at the pay-per-view. He says, well, he was the U.S. champion, which makes him the number one contender. Well, thank you, Scott.
What about the actual guy that was champion?
He would probably be a better argument for it. Jarrett applies a sleeper. It's countered by Hennig. And midway during the match, this was too much, Sean Stasiak comes out to a Mr. Perfect ripoff theme. Mm-hmm. Not a WCW Kurt Hennig theme. Mr. Perfect circa WWF. And Scott Hudson is shocked. That was meat! That was meat in the WWF! I thought I couldn't laugh anymore, but then he followed it up with this gem. We heard what happened to him in New York. What happened to him in New York, why? Because that's all they told us. There was no follow-up to that statement.
Well, I mean, everybody knows, right? Does everybody not know the story?
It was on the internet.
Yeah.
That was meat in WWF. We heard what happened to him in New York.
Yeah, everybody knows.
What happened, everybody? and I do mean everybody, is that Sean Stasiak was fired from the WWF after they discovered that he had been he had a tape recorder in the locker room and apparently had been recording stuff. And he disputes that he was eavesdropping, that he was recording stuff for himself or whatever. And this was discovered. Jim Ross, who was then the head of talent relations, just cut this guy apart in front of everybody in the locker room. And then he was fired. And I guess they thought, wow, this guy's really over right now. Let's bring the mole into WCW, pair him with Mr. Perfect, and everyone will be just typing away. Why? That meat, yeah, is in WCW.
And why should we pair him up with Mr. Perfect? Well, Mr. Perfect used to be known as Mr. Perfect, and we can make a nice little pun here.
Perfection.
Perfection. Brilliant.
WCW at its finest. Stasiak here on his big debut here to align himself as the second coming of Mr. Perfect was booked to do one spot. He had to spit his gum out and toss it at Kurt Hennig, and he fucked it up.
Uh-huh.
He spit it and, like, whacked it down. It hit the apron, and Mr. Perfect, I think in his head, said, fuck this place.
Yeah, it wasn't the only spot he fucked up. He goes and does his finisher.
Oh, Jesus, yes. You're right. He was booked to do two things,
yeah,
and he did two horrendously.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, Hennig, while he's watching Sean Stasiak, just back elbows the referee who just happens to be there, Charles Robinson. Stasiak tries to hit his finish on Hennig. Looked horrendous. And Jarrett backs up. Stasiak, first off, Hennig kicks out of this, doesn't he? Jarrett picks him up, hits the stroke, and eventually gets the pinfall. That was that. And then Hogan is searching in the skyboxes. And then they cut to Flair doing the exact same thing, searching for Shane Douglas. And then we cut to Kevin Nash on the phone with who knows who, saying, yeah, yeah, you should come. You should come.
Mm-hmm.
Okerlund is with Sting. Sting says he's worked his butt off in WCW since 1988, and he is the definition of loyalty, and he is coming after Jeff Jarrett for the WCW title this Sunday. The announcers speculate that Scott Hall was on the phone with Kevin Nash. And what do they say? We know where Hall has been and what the story is with Scott Hall.
Where has he been?
I don't know. I do not know. I assume he had been off TV with problems. But I don't know. Ric Flair comes out and he's got brass knuckles. And the unemployed Shane Douglas comes out with a Titantron video and theme music for a match. And here we go. A match that, in their eyes, has been 4 years in the making and has been given two segments of buildup. Flair gets thrown to the floor. He chops Douglas, tears his shirt off, hits him with a low blow. Hudson mentions how everyone knows this story from the dirt sheets, hotlines, and mainstream media. One of those three was a lie. And says how Douglas buried Ric Flair. And Schiavone then brings up all of Shane Douglas's shoot promos in another organization that we all used to watch and were confused by. You were confused by it.
Yeah.
Schiavone says that Douglas came out of the crowd. He might have even bought a ticket to this show, meaning that in 2000 he had much better luck than he did in 2012, where he bought a ticket to a show. This was his WCW reunion, which wasn't a reunion. Nope. Flair gets the advantage, and then Russo comes out with a bat, and he attacks Ric Flair, and the bell is called for this unsanctioned match at 3 minutes, and they beat the fuck out of Ric Flair with this bat, and then Russo crotch chops him. He could not look like more of a nerd here, crotch chopping. He looked like a little fan had run into the ring. He then steals Ric Flair's watch, which the announcers are just confused by. What does that mean? Is that a trophy to him? And then he crotch chops towards the audience. Oh, I detested Vince Russo by this point.
No, he's the invader.
He's the guy from up north. I mean, it really is like this is the same basis that the NWO is formed on. Invaders from New York, bringing in their characters from the WWF.
This was like the bastardized version. I mean, the NWO at its core was built on a real life feud between these two companies, with the perception that three of the biggest stars that the WWF had ever produced are coming to put this company out of business.
Yeah.
I just summarized that whole program right there. This was the former writer coming to what? Write and destroy this company? What was... I don't know what the process was here.
He was... The former writer...
Is coming to get rid of all these old guys.
Yes. And, yeah, that's the story. Yeah.
Kevin Nash comes out. He's on crutches. Scott Hudson. Let's not forget, this man was part of the Clique, a notorious group backstage. He calls, Nash calls Russo and Bischoff jackoffs and decide they're going to play wrestlers and attack the boys. He asks, what happened to that sweet little wrestling show we were doing? Where's the dog? I can't remember who the dog was. I think it was Brad Armstrong.
Wasn't it Steiner?
I don't think he meant Rick Steiner. They had some stupid gimmick.
They had a character named the dog?
Yeah, I don't know. Google the dog, WCW.
Oh, fuck.
He says, I just got off the phone with Scott Hall. He's straight, sober, and in a bad mood. And says, neither Russo or Bischoff would be here if it wasn't for the outsiders. He says, we saved Russo from Shawn Michaels on a bunch of occasions backstage. Okay.
Al Green was the dog.
Al Green. Yeah. He says, if it wasn't for them, Bischoff would still be getting coffee for Vern Gagne. And Schiavone replies, ooh, they're shooting.
Oh, boy.
Nothing is more nails on a chalkboard than verbiage like that. And then he calls out both Russo and Bischoff to bring their bat, chair, and balls. But instead, Mike Awesome runs in, the ECW champion.
With a fanny pack.
The fucking fanny pack.
The only time I've ever seen a wrestler make a run-in with a fanny pack.
He was that 70s guy with this look before they ever bestowed the gimmick on him.
Yeah.
He looked like he was right out of 1974. Mm-hmm. And here we go. Mike Awesome, who one of his biggest selling features was that he was a large dude, was booked in his first night to be dwarfed here by Kevin Nash. Attacks him from behind. They identify him as the ECW champion while Scott Hudson yells, doesn't he have a title defense coming up? Now, this was all... just a ridiculous backstage. Basically, they had signed Mike Awesome. They offered him a ridiculous deal because they wanted a big surprise when they came back. They're like, we don't have enough angles on this show. We got to get the ECW champion. And ECW came back and said, that's fine, but we've got this thing called a contract with Mike Awesome for 3 years. And eventually, they agreed that, okay, Mike Awesome can come to ECW, it can come to WCW, but you have to promote his upcoming match in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh.
Which was condensed to, doesn't he have a title defense coming up? and he would also have to come back and lose the title and work more some dates with ECW. So
wow.
Whatever. Why WCW felt the need to spend all this money on Mike Awesome, who made no difference after night one?
Yeah, it made a difference for ECW.
In a negative way.
Yeah. Well, maybe that was the point.
I guess. So there you go. Mike Awesome, your ECW champion, shows up and he attacks Kevin Nash. Hogan is on the phone, says he's going to sue Billy Kidman, and he's going to eat Bischoff's ass off. What? The fuck's going on this show?
Well, you tell me, because what was to happen after he says this?
I can't do this anymore.
Oh, my God.
I totally forgot about this next.
This show just keeps getting better.
Oh, this was... This is one of the worst shows I've ever reviewed. We didn't even know where he was, folks. I thought he was at backstage somewhere in a room. So he tosses the cameraman away. He acknowledges that a cameraman is shooting him, sends him away. We go to a long shot where he is in a limo, and a white Hummer drives into his limo. Ugh. Then it backs up, and it hits him over and over and over again. This was a homage to one of their stupidest angles from the prior summer, where Kevin Nash was attacked by someone in a white Hummer, and it was never revealed who it was. And it became this big, who was the Hummer driver? And they attack him with the Hummer, and Eric Bischoff gets out. Mind you, Eric Bischoff was the one driving, and Billy Kidman was the passenger. So... I don't know who wanted to see Kidman fight this guy, because Eric Bischoff was given all the heat in this angle.
Yeah.
He attacked him with the chair and bloodied him, and then he nearly murdered him with a Hummer.
Oh, well, come on. He was an accomplice. He sat in there.
This was like a heavy-duty injury angle, and Hogan would be back next Monday.
Yeah. Well, come on.
As the new badass Hulk Hogan, F-U-N-B Hulk Hogan, in his black attire.
Wow. The best part of all this was perhaps hearing Shivani try to call it. Shivani's just, we should have known all along. Bischoff was the driver. It's the white Hummer. It makes so much sense. And wasn't there a black Hummer prior to this?
I don't know, Wei. I don't know. Oh.
Okay.
How could you... What happened in the first segment, Wei? Do you have any recollection of what happened? How could you possibly process any of this shit when every single segment, there were like thousands of angles thrown at you? Nothing registered. Nothing. Oh, Lord. We continue onwards here. Hogan is taken out on a stretcher and a hard collar. You know... As much as people might complain, when the WWE does something like this, the stretcher job, it's like 10 minutes of silence where the guy is taken out and the announcers will come in quietly. I time this. 5 seconds they spent of putting Hulk Hogan on a stretcher and cutting to the next segment, which was Diamond Dallas Page coming out for his second match, and DDP comes out. Not only to his theme music in full, but he's got pyro.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Wasn't
that part of they've taken away his pyro and theme music, and now, we'll give it to him now.
Well, I don't know. They must have allotted the budget just for one.
They can't even keep their inside stupid production shoot bullshit straight.
Mm-hmm.
Shivani announces that TNT is going to allow them to stay on the air until 10:30. I think I downed a bottle of Jack Daniels at this point, knowing that we were getting an extra 30 minutes of Nitro here. Because this show was overwritten, and Scott Hudson says there is nothing else worth watching than Nitro right now. I highly disagree. Even if you weren't a wrestling fan. I'm sure there was a basketball game or, an infomercial or... Static. Diamond Dallas Page against Sting. Winner takes on Jeff Jarrett at Spring Stampede. Jarrett comes out before the match begins. Page is thrown to the floor and is selling his back as he blocks the death drop. There's a belly-to-belly by DDP. Jarrett's on the announce table during this, and he goes to Kimberly. DDP attacks him. Vampiro runs in, and for those that remember... When we reviewed Uncensored, Vampiro and Sting had formed an alliance. So Vampiro, of course, here just attacks Sting. So we have a surprise on the show. And he hits Sting with the nail in the coffin, the Michinoku driver. And DDP hits the diamond cutter onto Sting, pins him in 3 minutes. And then Jarrett comes in, goes for a guitar shot to DDP, who ducks. And Kimberly takes the guitar shot.
Uh-huh.
A lot of heat on Jeff Jarrett. So Jarrett is celebrating in the back after the commercial break with Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff, and they send Jeff Jarrett back to the arena, and they plug that this Sunday we will decide all the titles. And Jarrett says, this Sunday, I will become the WCW champion. And he invites Kimberly to the pay-per-view so he can show her more wood. DDP runs in, attacks Jeff Jarrett. Steiner and Luger run in, Luger sporting a FUBU shirt. Then Bagwell runs in, Vampiro runs in, The Wall, the rest of the locker room runs in, and they fight in the ring. Crowd chants for Goldberg. And basically here, the new blood is running wild. And Russo and Bischoff come out at the entrance ramp. They applaud the new blood for a well-done job on night one. And it ends with Bret Hart walking out from the backstage area, staring at Russo and Bischoff and shaking his head. He said, what a waste. In his head, he was like, why did you guys fly me here? Why am I here? And thus ended the longest edition of Nitro in history, even though it wasn't.
What a show.
Nitro, that week, did a 3.06. Raw murdered them with a 6.17. And Nitro, with all the buzz of this show and the new writers shaking things up and all this momentum, dropped 0.5 of a rating point to a 2.47 the next week.
Wow.
And that was that. And to give you an idea of this big dawning of a new era, here's a brief little synopsis of how the numbers went, okay? Week one of Russo and Bischoff, 3-1 to a 2-5, 3-1, 2-5, 3-8, 3-1, 3-0, 3, 2-8, 3, 2-7, 2-8, 2.3 over the next 10 weeks or so. Great timing. I hated this show with every ounce of my being. If you were watching at the time and you were reading every dirt sheet, I'm sure it was an entertaining show for you.
Yeah.
I don't know how any casual observer could have enjoyed this. You had one match announced for your pay-per-view and the promise of titles being decided.
I don't even know if it was entertaining for those people because it was
confusing.
It was like throwing out references for the sake of throwing out references without using anything to build to any type of drama or storyline. It was just here's something that you're not supposed to hear about on TV, but we're doing it. It was shock TV, shock value TV.
Oh.
With a limited audience.
Impact has never, ever, ever been in even the league of this shit. Impact was the greatest benefactor of us reviewing this show. I will be so less harsh on Impact, no matter what. Impact never is this bad. Never, ever.
No. And yeah, I suppose everybody involved with this show probably learned from their mistakes.
Yeah, thank God that the people in charge here are no longer part of the wrestling business. Yeah. I mean, 12 years later, I mean, we have the different people on top and different people in positions of power over the past 3 years. It's really refreshing to know that if you bankrupt the company, you will be blackballed from the industry.
You know, I think this review and watching this episode is a good primer for the Vince Russo shoot pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Shoot interview on iPay-per-view. Just to imagine all the questions that will be asked of the man.
Yeah, I actually want to review that interview when Russo does it.
Sure.
And we are going to fact-check it, okay? All of Russo's bullshit that he comes out during that interview with, because everyone there live are not going to have the... You know, in today's world of the internet, everything is... You can verify. You can fact check everything. Mm-hmm. It's not this bullshit where you can make up shit about how, oh, I took Nitro from a 2.5 to a 3.5 in X amount of weeks. All those numbers are out there. Mm-hmm. And I hope people do their research because I think we're going to get a lot of bullshit during that interview. But I totally want to review that.
Sure.
All right. Let's go into feedback. This should be a lot of fun. For people, and I apologize if you sat through this, but boy, are you a champion if you lasted through this Nitro. I wrote, dude, 2,100 words in my notes. I think this was the longest I've ever written notes on for a review. And this is for a television show with commercials.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
My God. I think my appreciation for wrestling in 2012 has just leaped.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording this on a Monday night. Nothing they do on Raw tonight, I don't think can upset me.
Yeah, no.
I hated the show. This might have been my least favorite wrestling show I've ever watched.
What do you rate it out of 10?
Negative 50 out of 10.
Wow.
And that's almost, I think I'm being too kind to it. I don't want to ever watch a show that I can't give it a worse rating. I want this to be like infinite negative in the grand scope of negativity.
Right, okay.
This was the worst wrestling show I think I've ever watched.
Was it? Yeah. This is worse than maybe like Death.
I watched 2000 WCW just as a fan. I was just simply a fan that followed the industry and stuff, you know, as a fan. That was it. And, you know, people will go back and they'll say nothing was worse than WCW in 2000. And sometimes I say, well, you know, they went out of business and people are always going to be a bit harsh. No. I watched this and it was like, no, this was the worst. This was just a sample of a guy in Russo who was given no filter. He was given 4 hours a week to go fucking crazy. And he just got to be, he got to sit down on his computer and it was like masturbatory for like this internet wrestling fan to go crazy. Jesus Christ. I've really got to be in the mood if we review any more WCW television from 2000.
All right.
Because it's anger-inducing. What do you give this one, Wei?
This is
where you go back. I like the show.
Well, I mean, listen, I rate my shows very different from the way you rate yours. I rate them based on how much entertainment I suppose I got. Not to say I was entertained, but I certainly wasn't bored from this. And I would probably rate this a lot worse if I was actually bored. But there are a lot of moments on this show that there was never a dull moment, I guess you could say. And they're not good moments for
there were any damaging moments.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm not looking at this from a historical perspective. I'm not looking at this from a business perspective. I'm simply looking at this as, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon. I pop this show in. Am I going to laugh? Is it going to be memorable? And yes, it absolutely was. So I give this a 4 out of 10.
How many angles do you think they shot on this show? I meant to keep count.
40. 45.
And how many resonate? What was the big angle coming out of this that you couldn't wait to see the next week?
Oh, the white Hummer by far. That was the highlight for me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to feedback. And let's start with David Dufvenberg. I can't believe I was actually excited for this. In hindsight, I should have realized that maybe there was a reason Russo and Ferrara left the WWE. Holy shit, this was a mess. If I wanted to analyze every angle on the show alone, I would need to take the day off of work to explain it all. It just proved how big of an ego Russo had, thinking he could just erase everything and start over. You can't clean up shit with shit. The only good thing to come out of the Russo era was the pinata on a pole match. The pinata fell within the first minute and was the best comedy match ever for all the wrong reasons. I can't wait for you guys to try to make sense of this episode.
Yeah, the pinata on a pole was actually a few months earlier. It was their genius idea of, we've got Juventud Guerrera and we've got some guy named Justin Liger from Japan. What do you want to do with them? Because they had a deal with New Japan where New Japan would get WCW talent and then they were obligated that they'd have to use Liger. But this was before Russo had come in. So all of a sudden,
what a burden. You have to use this,
I gotta
this
use,
guy.
I got to use some fucking guy that can't even speak goddamn English. You fucking Mexican. He's not Mexican, Vince. He's actually Japanese. Same fucking difference, you pinata motherfucker. Alexander Rios. Wow, this is a test of my memory to try to remember specifics. I hope I'm even getting I hope I'm getting the episode correct. I do remember the pinata. Okay, guys, this was not the pinata on a pole match. Bischoff, he equates the Russo-Bischoff handshake to what was at the time the Bischoff-McMahon hugging equivalent.
No,
but it was also, like, didn't it make sense to you that if you have this big idea of new blood millionaires, you put one on each side?
Yeah.
You should have had the warring factions.
Okay.
That to me would have made more sense than let's swerve them and they're working together. For historical reference, everyone, Bischoff lasted about 6 weeks before he pretty much said, fuck this shit, and he went home. And Russo was left to himself. Anyway, that being said, This was the start of the march to death for WCW. Hogan trying to still wear black to act like an Attitude Era badass. Please, just stick to your Yappapai match, moron. Or better yet, the irrelevant feud with Billy Kidman and the blow-up at Bash at the Beach. I just remember that by the summer of 2000, Hogan, Goldberg, Bret Hart, and the NWO Silver / 2000 were gone with Jarrett as world champion. Ironically, WCW ratings in 2000 are equivalent to Raw of today. They were still, even during this time, they were doing similar ratings, but there's a bit of a difference with audience, because the rating is based on how many households you're in, and USA is in a lot more homes than TNT was at this time, but it was like their numbers were very good even at this point.
Well, wrestling was
good. I mean, they did a 3.0 for this this Nitro, which...
Yeah, this was the peak of wrestling's popularity.
This was even when WCW had got... Like, 99, when everyone associates with WWF just stomping over them, Nitro was doing fours and shit. Like, they were very healthy, even into 2000. They were losing a lot of money, though, because they were spending money on ridiculous stuff. But their television numbers were still good.
Felipe Hernandez, first off, congrats on your great work WrestleMania weekend. And John, one day you will have to tell us who that wrestler was who was bothered with your questions. Now on to Nitro. How to forget this show? This was WCW at its finest, but the worst was Mark Madden without a shirt. A show with too much brawling, and on paper, the idea was interesting, but they had too much old talent refusing to leave their spots. Hogan working with Kidman at this show was good, but we all know that was the end of that angle. Hogan was victorious, and Kidman was crushed. Also, they buried Sid's title reign. I don't know if it was after the show that he was injured, but he doesn't appear again on TV until after November of that year. The Mike Awesome run-in was special at the time. It was a good move, but again, we all know how he ended. Yeah, that 70s guy. Yeah. So there you go.
We go... this name's going to be tough. Panagiotis Drakopoulos. This was the worst wrestling event ever. Nitro was a Botchamania special in disguise. WCW rebooting the product 6 days before the pay-per-view. 6 days! Shane Douglas and Scott Steiner botching the English language. Horrible audio and video editing. Sean Stasiak botching Perfect's gum trick. What the fuck? The start of the awful Kidman-Hogan feud. And an ocean of problems too long to post here. I give this show a negative 9,000 out of 10.
Matthew Hardaway, I attended a terrible WCW house show the night before this that was headlined by Buff Bagwell beating Kurt Hennig. Hennig threatened to call Vince McMahon and go back to the WWF if he lost. The highlight was Vampiro beating Silver King in the opener with a dangerous-looking reverse Frankensteiner and then cutting a promo where he lied and said he got his start right here in Huntsville, Alabama. What a worker.
Oh, yeah. Andrew O'Donnell, I don't think I can be really negative about this show because the ship was already under sea. All wrestling fans knew it, and the workers didn't even believe in the program. I don't think this was a bad Nitro in comparison to what I've seen from 2000, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the jabs Russo and Bischoff were throwing around probably confused the newer fans at the time, like the scissors incident with Sid and Arn. My guess would be that would confuse a lot of people that casually tuned in to watch their program. Stuff like the verbal jabs probably went over the fans' heads. I was only entertained by this show because of the glaring negatives of the company. Which is a great reason to tune in.
Devin the Grohl. WCW barely had a chance to... WCW actually had a chance to do something good with this reboot, but they blew it. If they had just done the obvious thing and had LaRusso-led New Blood versus the Bischoff-led Millionaires Club, which I understand was the original plan, it might have gone better. Or even actually letting the New Blood be the faces in the feud, as hindsight suggests they should have been all along. It's this sort of booking that made WCW what it is today.
I have no faith that no matter what dynamic, it would have been fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what, I think the audiences were going to graduate to or gravitate to the
Not to mention to you position guys. Like the older talent. I think it would have been very difficult to position them as heels. I mean, they're the people that the audience is most familiar with. I mean, even look at that Rock Hogan match, how people love older talent because, I mean, it's just going to be now, especially when you paint them in that light, that you're too old. Yeah. Get lost. Mm-hmm. Zoli Cross. Wow, what a clusterfuck. And my comments reflect this, I am afraid. I tried watching this and couldn't remember what happened by the end. I could be very interested to see how many of the Millionaires Club are still millionaires. And who exactly were the fans supposed to get behind? For a show trying to push the value of new talent, is it ironic that Hogan, Flair, etc. had at least three or four segments each of that half, the new, or that half of the new blood were veterans?
Well, this whole thing was really made to... I feel like it was made to bury the new talent more so than, you know, help them.
Oh, they made Kidman in one night here.
Yeah. Charles Spencer. Ah, the beginning of the Bischoff-Russo era. I remember being immediately turned off when I first saw this when Bischoff alluded to the infamous scissors fight between Sid and Arn. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have been that surprised. This kind of tasteless tactic had become a trademark of WCW in this era. I also had a hard time just suspending disbelief with Kidman posing any kind of challenge to Hogan. Kind of looks to me like a moped taking on a semi-truck. This show wasn't all bad for me, though. Watching Tank Abbott attack Mark Madden, the franchise versus Flair tease, and the appearance of Mike Awesome were all highlights for me. Overall, I rate the show a 1.5 out of 10. It would be higher, but this new creative direction put the final nails in the coffin for WCW.
Mike Couture. Okay, I got out of watching WCW in about 1998, so I never saw the awesomeness of this time period. This was so bad that I ended up watching the Thunder After and Spring Stampede. It doesn't make sense to me that the New Blood were the heels here. The good guys got beat in almost every match, and there was 1,000 run-ins to a point where no one gets over and no one cares about anything. Now, if you throw out the fact that Hogan beat the shit out of Kidman forever and had to have Eric Bischoff help him, there's still no fucking way you could take Billy Kidman seriously. He doesn't look like a main eventer or sound like one. He doesn't look tough. Fuck, he looks homeless. There's more I would bitch about, but I won't bore you anymore, except I want to finish by saying I thought the funniest moment was Hogan yelling, "Eric Bischoff, I'm going to eat your ass on," or something like that.
Jermone Jackson. Being a diehard WCW fan back in the day, I was excited about the show at the time. With 1999 being a rough year for the company, I was looking forward to a fresh start. In hindsight, I realized that the show was god-awful. They had a great idea for a storyline, but executed poorly. There was a run in every single match, the talent were constantly burying each other, and the guys they were trying to get over were made the heels in the feud. It amazes me to this day how the number one wrestling company in North America would be out of business a year after this Nitro. I would still love to see a WWE-produced WCW The Final Year DVD.
It would be worth watching.
Sure.
Sergey, typical Impact from 12 years ago. Hogan all over the show? Check. Authority figure gimmick abuse? Check. Meaningless matches with supposed to be megastars putting over the competition and its wrestlers? Shoot promos and so on. I didn't like watching Russo act like a badass. I look up to wrestlers as legit athletes, suspend my disbelief at least. But when I see guys like Russo acting tough, all I can think is, I, the fan, can break you in half. Get out of the ring. Can't wait for the review. With WCW, it should be fun.
William Young, this was absolutely terrible. There's no hyperbole that falls short of describing how bad this was. Let me say this. I think the idea of a reboot is not inherently a bad one, but it is better suited for a more standard dramatic television show as opposed to a wrestling program. Go figure that Russo and Bischoff treated Nitro like the former instead of the latter. Dull matches, excessive in-ring promos, and the overall dominance of a crummy heel stable added to the flagrant gaps in logic that would be almost charming 12 years later if we didn't already have a company that is scarily close to being a mirror of this exact product. I don't care to give star ratings or any of that sort of thing, but I guarantee that this godforsaken show is minus something, and I am minus 2 hours of my life having watched it. I do it all for review away because I know you guys will make it worth it.
This was such a typical Russo staple where when his first show in, he would do all these insane angles and stuff, and it got a lot of buzz. But it was like a few weeks later, it was like Impact, that big January 4th show. Huge show, did great ratings by Impact standards. But, you know, 3 weeks into it, it was just meant nothing.
Yeah.
There was it could never sustain itself. And you threw out so much stuff on that first show that, yeah, it felt fast-paced, which this show did. I mean, it was Christ, you had a seizure watching segment to segment.
Yeah. Well, he was that first episode of Impact. It was just like we all knew what was happening with that the moment it happened. He was basically blowing his load.
Yeah.
In that.
Let's
first
sign
episode.
A bunch of guys, debut them all, Let's shoot a bunch of angles, yeah. none of which will resonate with people or stick with them after the 2 hours because so much is thrown out, and then suddenly. Oh, fuck, we've got to come back with another show. And here, they had to do 2 hours of Thunder 2 nights later, mm-hmm. and then a pay-per-view. Ryan Morris, an intriguing idea with horrible execution. Why did DDP and Luger get their music and pyro cut, but Sting and Sid didn't? Tank Abbott's promo was horrible. How exactly was Kidman supposed to benefit from Hogan beating the shit out of him? Steiner and Bagwell are the top two for the Scott Putski Award. Russo trying to act tough was laughable. The White Hummer got zero reaction. Overall, a lame duck show. 4 out of 10. I will say, the visual just of Kidman and Hogan was, it was so backwards. Like, Kidman here is the heel who, it's just, visually, it's just doesn't compute with people.
No, no.
Watching this little guy work with Hogan.
Yeah, as the heel.
It just...
Dennis Amaya, who the hell thought removing all the titles from their respective owners was a good idea, and 6 days before a pay-per-view nonetheless. This was a horrible show with two lone highlights. It was apropos to see almost all the wrestlers come out in black in the opening segment. Death was near. Vince Russo was the most annoying character in wrestling. His presence and involvement in anything has changed the channel heat. This show was an extremely hard... was extremely hard to get through. Right when I thought I was about to finish it, I realized I was in part 6 of 10. This show had everything a wrestling show shouldn't have. There was an attempted murder, excessive cursing, cars, and shoot promos. Everything was awful. From the minimal amount of wrestling to the promos to the backstage crap, and almost all sucked. One highlight was Tank Abbott throwing around Mark Madden, thus shutting him up. I became a Tank Abbott fan as a result. The second was the Flair segments throughout the show. There was so much shit on this show. By the end of the show, nothing mattered thanks to it being so oversaturated. The Douglas return was forgotten, as was the Hogan murder. Nothing mattered. A shit show. After this review of Spring Stampede,
done. Joey Howell, I'm so glad I had never watched this in the year 2000, and why would I with a great WWF product at the time? He goes on to say, the Scott Putski Award should go to Sean Stasiak. He must have been on the Alistair Overeem diet. Huh. I guarantee Stasiak's levels of testosterone were not 1-to-1 in 2000 like a regular man's. It's easy to see why WCW went out of business, smashing limos with Hummers every Monday night. Jeff Jarrett had way too much camera time for me to handle. The slap nuts Jeff Jarrett sucked as a gimmick. It never got over. The show just ends with Bret Hart looking confused and disgusted that this is what he has to do for a living. Overall, this show was impossible to follow, confusing, and maybe the worst episode of Nitro ever. I give it a 1 out of 10. To quote Mike Tenay, see you at Spring Stampede with no champions. Confusion reigns.
Rio Jackson. When I watched this show 12 years ago, I thought it was awesome, and I was truly happy for Billy Kidman, thinking that he was to be the next big thing in wrestling by pinning Hogan. What a delusional 8-year-old I was. I completely stopped watching Nitro a couple of weeks later. The WWF product at the time seemed way cooler, and the wrestling was much better. 1.5 out of 10.
Imagine a child watching this show. An 8-year-old.
Yeah.
I'd have a headache.
Oh, he really liked it. And when you're a child, I guess you don't care so much at all about the nuances.
All right. That's going to wrap up this thrilling edition of Review Away. What a review. April 10th, 2000, Monday Nitro, folks. You can go check it out on YouTube. It exists. There's proof that this show happened.
Yeah, totally. And you can watch it if you... you know what I said earlier, like, you know, relaxing and watching this show for a laugh, I kind of take it back because I don't think it's impossible to sit through this entire thing straight. I mean, scrub through it. And even then...
I will say,
Jesus,
this would be an awesome show to watch if we did like a review away viewing party with like 20 people and we were drinking and stuff. This would be an awesome show to watch with like fans.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, it'd be great to just tear apart with people.
Absolutely.
But when I'm sitting on my laptop alone watching this,
it's just sad.
Pain.
It's like drinking alone.
Yeah. In a corner. with an eviction notice on your door.
Yeah.
So, a horrible show, but we hope you enjoyed this retro look at Nitro, folks. This is what happened in 2000, and this company amazingly went out of business. Next week, we're going to get back on track. What are we going to review, Wei?
We are going to review Backlash of the Year 2000.
Which is funny because we just gave Backlash for the last hour and a half to Nitro, but this is the actual Backlash.
The actual Backlash from the WWE in the year 2003. And, of course, this is the show that features Bill Goldberg taking on The Rock.
And Brock Lesnar, John Cena.
Brock Lesnar and John Cena, the feud that everybody is talking about in 2012. Well, let's see how they did 8 years ago.
This was after the brand split, but when they were still doing dual-branded pay-per-view, so it was both the Raw and SmackDown roster together. So that's going to be our review for next week, and we'll be taking your feedback. We're going to throw a thread up onto the Facebook site. And, Wei, I teased it on the Law this past Sunday night that you are busy at work constructing changes.
Yeah.
Do we have any update?
Well, it's ready.
Is it up already?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you posted it a few days ago.
Yeah, it's been up all... Yeah.
That's right, because we got that great response when we posted it Monday night.
Yeah.
While everyone is here, we do want to mention that as we are moving offices and we're going through our technical issues, for the next little while, we're going to be taping Review of Raw on Monday nights. It's just become very... it just becomes really annoying when we get the, you know, cut off on Skype and stuff. And for people listening live, I think it's kind of distracting and can be very annoying. I would eventually like to get back to doing it live, but we've got to come up with a firm solution so that it's not a gamble every Monday that we're going to stay on the line with one another. As much as I love Waze commercials.
As much as I love talking to nobody by myself. For the time being, we are going to tape them, but we'll get them up as soon as possible. So you know what? Have a nap. Come wake back up and you can download
this
show.
Yeah, they'll be up around 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time Monday nights. And if all goes well with our move to our office, not only do I hope that we'll be back to doing them live, but we might have some additions to the show.
Really?
Let's just say that.
Okay, more teasing. But should we just tell people where to find...
Where is this message board?
All right, it's a message board. We haven't... Well, let's stop being so inside and we'll...
Well, we talked about it a lot on Review of Raw, too. So let's... for those that have not found it, we're still going to run our Facebook pages. We're still going to update those with all of our stuff and communicate with people. But we've found this central location for all your law-related materials. It's a free registration, and it's just easier to interact and go through the different shows for us.
Lawradio.proboards.com. Lawradio.proboards.com. This is where you'll find the new law message board, and this is where you can leave all your feedback for us, for Review Away, for the law, where you'll find an archive of all of our latest shows, I guess starting from this week, an archive of this week's shows, and chat about everything you want. And I know a lot of you have been asking for a message board. We've been kind of hesitant on doing it for a while simply because we love the format of Facebook. And to be honest with you, for me, what I like most about Facebook is that people use your real names, and thus people are accountable for all the things that they post. Right now on a message board, I mean, we're kind of leaving that up to all of you guys. So, you know, we ask that we just want to have good discussion. So please be respectful. Please maintain the same amount of respect and amount of intelligence that you guys have been providing on the Facebook groups. And, you know, let's have interesting debate about pro wrestling.
Yeah, I think especially amongst our community, I think we've built up a lot of, I guess, goodwill with a lot of people that I think if any dicks get through... It's almost like a lot of our listeners almost it'll police themselves, you know, because I think a lot of people, you know, you want to come up, you want to call me an asshole. That's fine. But to have some reasoning behind it. We're not saying no negativity. We're just saying, you know, don't be retarded. Mm-hmm. I can't say it any better than that. So we will wrap things up, folks. And you know what? Song to go out with. I bought a CD on the weekend.
Did you?
I don't buy too many CDs anymore, but...
I didn't know they still sold CDs.
I bought it at an Indigo bookstore.
Wow.
I was in the Indigo bookstore, and Aqua came on the loudspeakers.
Okay.
I didn't buy an Aqua CD, though. I bought...
You own them already.
I do own them, actually. I bought the Black Keys album.
Oh.
So let's go out with some Black Keys.
Very nice.
Why not? And in the meantime, go to reviewaway.com, liveaudiowrestling.com, and
lawradio.proboards.com.
We're going to buy a URL. We're going to make it easier to get to that message board. But in the meantime, go there. You can follow Way at Way0937, at Law Radio, and tons of stuff coming up. Wrestle Reunion is this weekend. I know I'm it's just plug here, but we should talk about Wrestle Reunion.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be there all day Friday, all day Saturday, noon till 6, and me and Way are going to be doing podcasts each day on StickCam. You can simply go to stickcam.com/reviewaway to listen live, and then we'll be posting those podcasts up later in the day. We're hoping to have a lot of guests throughout the days, including Dan Lavransky and Jason Agnew. If you happen to be at the reunion, come by, say hi, grab a sticker, maybe a t-shirt, pop on the podcast with us. We really encourage you to go to there. You can get tickets at WrestleReunion.com. Tons of people are going to be at this Way. And since we were just at the one in Miami, it'll be interesting to see what the turnout's like at this one in Toronto.
Yeah, totally. I know, John, you've been uploading a lot of videos onto the Fight Network's YouTube account promoting WrestleReunion.
Yeah, all week we're releasing new interviews each day leading up to WrestleReunion this weekend. You can catch those either at LiveAudioWrestling.com or YouTube.com/... Fight Network. So those are all interviews we conducted down in Miami. We've got ones up there with New Jack, with Gangrel, Colt Cabana. Lots of interviews currently up there that you can check out, and more to come.
Even Dennis Rodman running.
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
With Brutus Beefcake, right, who reluctantly talked to us. So that'll be a story for another podcast. But tons of stuff coming up. Very busy weekend. Check us out at Wrestle Reunion. We'll be on the air Friday and Saturday. We'll be going on the air right at noon each day, and we'll just see how the day goes. We're not promising a five-hour marathon because we're human folks, and we don't know what the day
took
is going to
provide. Took a lot out of us last time we did that.
I nearly died, as Way saw.
We almost killed each other.
Yeah, delirium was setting in. Yeah. All right, that's our real wrap-up now for the show. So we'll go out here with some Black Keys, and we'll be back on Friday with Review and Impact and Wrestle Reunion Podcast Day 1 live.
said that men like Billy Kidman shouldn't be headlining flea market independent shows. This ain't no flea market.